Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Stacy Wright. Stacy Wright is a mother of two, an entrepreneur, and a passionate community advocate and philanthropist. Over the past two decades, Stacy has had the privilege of building six businesses, each one teaching her valuable lessons along the way. She has created a new movement that she calls Heart Profit. This model prioritizes compassion, community, and the well-being of workers, moving away from the unsustainable profit-at-all-cost approach that dominates modern business practices. And Stacy, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to speaking with you for some time now.
Yes, I've been looking forward to it as well. Thanks for having me.
And I got to give a shout out to Steve Ramona. Ramona is the ultimate podcast connector and just networker. He introduced us. He thought you would be a good fit for the podcast. We had a great, I think, pre-chat, great conversation. And here we are today. And Steve, if you are going to listen to this, send me your bill for services. He has sent me so many great guest referrals out of the goodness of his heart. And he truly epitomizes servant leadership.
Absolutely. And he's a good discerner of those that are heart-based and heart-led and authentic. So I always know when he connects me with people, it's always a true, authentic heart connection.
And I feel the same way, too. When he connects me with somebody, it's always a no-brainer that I'm going to have them as a guest contributor to the podcast. And I tell my potential guest contributors, you just need to decide whether I'm a good fit for you. So
I love it.
As you know, I've got some questions for you, and I know you've got some answers for me. So whenever you're ready, we'll get going.
It sounds great. Let's get it going.
All right. First of all, tell our audience about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
I am a serial entrepreneur. Ever since I was 18, I always knew I would own my own business. I've had six businesses over the last 20 years. And that's been a really big piece of what shaped me. And even more than that is my mental health journey and my family of origin's mental health journeys. So those two things combined have been very impactful in my life and in what is unfolding now in the Heart Profit movement. But as far as the entrepreneurial journey goes, I love solving problems with the power and sustainability of business. Business is a strong problem-solving vehicle. And so I've always just had a passion for that. And after my third business had a major blowout, we had a product-based business that we got it to $5 million. We had patents that were worth $17 million. We were doing really, really well. And then we had a lawsuit. And the lawsuit was the first domino of a series of dominoes that happened over a 10-year period that was a complete come apart of my life as I knew it up until that point. So I emerged from that enormous loss as a single middle-aged mom with $500,000 in debt. And so that was a big pivotal turning point in my life. While going through that grieving process, that enormous grieving process of losing everything, I recognized early on that drinking a bottle of wine every night was not going to be sustainable. And I had to find another way to cope with the loss that I was going through. And all I remember was one day somebody called me up and said, "Hey, we need some help at the soup kitchen. Will you come volunteer?" And I didn't have anything going on that day. So I said, "Yeah, I'll come down and help." And I went down there, and I don't remember anything else about that day except for when I walked out of that kitchen 4 hours later, I felt lighter. I felt more at peace than I had in a long time. And I thought, I need to do more of that. That just feels good. And it was serving others. And you talked about Steve being a servant leader. That really started my journey of servant leadership and being of service. And what I realized was when I was serving others, my pain lessened greatly. And so during that period of my life, I really threw myself into service. And I became a member of the board of the Child and Family Guidance Center that did therapy for children who had been through trauma, the homeless shelter for teenagers, the child welfare board, which was for the foster kids, a lot of child agencies that I really became involved with. And it opened my eyes to a whole nother world. Up until that point, I had been pretty blind to the realities that a lot of children are facing and families are facing. And once my eyes got open to that, I never was the same again. And at that point, I started seeing that we as a society had a mental health crisis that was growing and growing and growing so quickly that we couldn't keep up with it in the charities that I was serving on. And as an entrepreneur who loves to solve problems powerfully and sustainably, I recognize we need to do something different. And it's got, like, why can't we use that vehicle of business to solve the mental health crisis? We can solve all kinds of other problems. Let's bring those two together. And so that was a big, huge turning point for me where I said, okay, from now on, for this season of my life, I'm dedicated to using business as a power for good in our societal issues, in our mental health issues. And so that was probably the biggest pivotal moment in my life, was that period of time. And subsequently, things that have evolved have turned into what we're doing now. So does that answer your question?
It sure does. Yeah, it answers it totally. Okay. And, you know, the thing is, you were mentioning about using the business approach to solve problems in the mental health industry. You know, it really isn't that much of a jump. And let me tell you from my perspective why I don't think it's that much of a jump. I used to work in a non-for-profit addictions agency back, you know, from 1986 to 2012. And we were always under accreditation, you know, review every 2 or 3 months by the Joint Commission of Accreditation for the Joint Commission for the Accreditation of Hospital Organizations. And we had an organizational management team where we did an organizational management approach to solving problems. We would have project teams. And we basically looked at one aspect of the organization in terms of how to improve dietary services for our patients. And, you know, we did that, and those recommendations were implemented. And though we didn't do any follow-up, we all know what the importance of good diet is to mental health and physical health. The recommendations that we made were implemented. And, you know, I think it would have been interesting to see what concurrent changes there were in clients' mental health because of those changes. So I don't think it's much of a jump, Stacy. I think it makes good sense because there's a lot of good practical problem-solving methods that businesses use that could be translated to solve any kind of human service crisis. So.
Well, yeah. And you know, we spend a lot of time at work, and we've all had the experience of being, or most of us have had experience of being in a toxic work environment.
Absolutely.
And when we're bathed in a toxic work environment day after day, we go home different. It affects our mental health. It impacts our well-being, physically and mentally. And the opposite is true also. When we have a positive work environment where we feel like we have a purpose and we're fulfilling that purpose and we're part of a team and we're connected, that also changes our mental health. Mm-hmm. And so that's, to me, like, if we change our business models to where we have environments where it's a positive work environment, we can go a long way to solving the mental health crisis in the society we're facing.
Absolutely. And if we feel connected to the organization's mission, if we feel connected to the stakeholders in that organization, that's the staff and the administration of that organization. You're talking about now a business movement becoming a spiritual movement.
Yes, yes. And you mentioned addiction. Addiction is the number one killer of people ages 15 to 59.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. It wasn't even in the top 10 20 years ago when you were working in that field. It has taken over. And we all know that part, you know, a big piece of addiction is loneliness. It's that disconnection from ourselves, disconnection from each other, disconnection from a community. And so having connection and bringing connection back into our workplaces and workspaces, because we spend so much time there, can go a long way in helping with addiction as well.
Absolutely. And that leads me into my next question about your Heart Prophet movement.
Yes.
Tell our audience about Heart Prophet. What are the services and resources you provide to those individuals who request them? And how does Heart Prophet align with your own personal values?
Thank you for asking that question. And I'm going to answer that question with a story, because this story pretty much sums up so beautifully what we're doing and why we're doing it. So in January of this year, I lost my sister to complications of alcoholism. Oh. And it was really, really sad to watch this happen, but it didn't happen overnight. It was a 15-year decline of her health and her mental health and just her life in general. But there was a one-year period in the middle of that decline where she had a shift and she changed, and she started coming back to life, and the light came back on in her eyes. And if anybody out there has had a family member that suffered with addiction, you know what I'm talking about. That light comes back on. And she actually got sober that year. So this was a year out of a 15-year decline that she actually had a reversal, and she was doing really well. And we felt so much hope for her and so much hope for her whole family. But then after a year's time, she started going downhill again. When we looked at what was different during that one year, there was one thing that was different in that year. And that one thing was she had a boss that cared about her and that connected with her.
Yes.
And that, like, she was a servant leader to my sister. So she not only got to know my sister, but she always had the attitude of, how can I support the people that work for me to help them succeed? So it was always like, how can I help you succeed? That was her question. How can I help you succeed? And I see your potential up here and you're not meeting that. So how can I bring you up to your potential? Like, she took it a whole step further. And so my sister really responded to that, and she became a whole different person that year under that leader. And then that leader moved on and a new leader came in, and the new leader was command and control, profit at all costs, people are expendable. And we never got my sister back after that. But what that showed me was how much of an impact that leaders have on the people that work on their teams. And so in a nutshell, what Heart Prophet is about, that boss, the boss's name that made that change for my sister, her name was Griselda. And I didn't even know her until I met her at my sister's funeral. And that's when I got to have a conversation with her and hear her side of things. Mm-hmm. But it's Griselda. And so the mission of Heart Prophet is to transform every single leader into a Griselda. Hi. Worldwide. And so that is the big mission of Heart Prophet. Now, how we go about doing that, we have education for leaders. We have a curriculum that we take leaders through. It's a holistic approach to developing an environment and a workplace where people thrive, and subsequently the business thrives better when your people are thriving. Surprise, surprise. But we take leaders through education. So we have education. We also have a certification. So people that go through the education process become a certified leader. We have a directory of Heart Prophet certified businesses. We also have Heart Prophet recognized businesses. So these are businesses that care about their people and that are doing good things for their people, that don't necessarily, they haven't gone through the curriculum that we have, but we want to recognize those as well. We have a directory of companies that people can buy from and work for that are heart-based, heart-led businesses. And then on the other side of the movement, Heart Profit is a movement. So we want to accelerate this way of doing business, the servant leader way of doing business. On the other side of the accelerator is a crowdfunding platform where we're recruiting 1 million people globally to join this movement and to join this platform. It's $5 a month to join, and that gives us a $5 million a month platform to pour into and accelerate this kind of business. Because there's a lot of people out there that are doing good with their business. Mm-hmm. And they have a hard time getting funding from investors because investors want profit at all costs and people being expendable. They don't really care about the impact. But Heart Profit is all about the impact with sustainability, of course. Mm-hmm. But that is what we are building. So basically, in a nutshell, we're accelerating the process of turning every leader into a Griselda.
I like that as a mission statement. And you know, first of all, let me extend my condolences for the loss of your sister.
Thank you.
One of the things, as somebody who's worked a lot around grief and has done bereavement support, I know the loss of a sibling is just as every bit needs to be honored as any other loss. And sometimes that gets thrown under the rug for a lot of different reasons. I wanted to make sure that I took a moment to express my condolences. The other thing with addiction, and we both know, Stacy, how stigmatized addiction is. Mm-hmm. It's either a person is labeled as an addict and their success is measured, well, did they get sober or didn't they get sober? A lot of times we need to look at the spaces in between. We need to look at that 1 year or previous years where your sister was not using, where she was being of service, where she left her mark. And a lot of times that gets thrown under the white, you know, it gets thrown, tossed aside. Because yeah. We look at addiction as an either or, and it isn't. There's this, right. Those spaces in between that we also need to look at to I think, evaluate the totality of somebody's life and the value of somebody's life. And, you know, we can't judge the value of anybody else's life, much less our own. And I'm sure your sister has had more of an impact. Maybe had more of an impact in that 1 year that maybe she thought she ever had for the entirety of her life. But I would suspect the entirety of her life, she had an impact, a positive impact on those around her.
Oh, absolutely. At her funeral, the officiant opened it up for people to tell stories about my sister. And he had to cut people off because there were so many people that wanted to stand up and talk about what a positive impact she was. And how positive she was. She never had a bad thing to say about anybody. She never had an enemy. She was just a bright, bright, bright light in this world. And I think this world was just too dark and it just consumed her light. But she was definitely a bright light in this world. And in her memory and her life and her legacy will live on through Heart Profit.
I have no doubt.
Yes, thank you.
So let's talk about how compassion, genuineness, and presence positively impact the bottom line. And the bottom line, as we've talked about, is a consistent standard to measure the success of any business. But how can these three qualities that, to me, make up servant leadership, how can they positively impact the bottom line?
Okay, say the three things again.
Compassion, genuineness, and presence.
Ooh. Yes. Oh, gosh. Those are good ones. Compassion, obviously, the heart is so, we know the future of business is heart. Manusha Feek, who was the London School of Economics president, she said, jobs of the past and business of the past was about muscle. Business of today is about the brain, but jobs of tomorrow and business of tomorrow is going to be about the heart. And tomorrow is here. Yes. We are here now. AI has taken over a lot of the intelligent stuff that we've done. And now what we have left is our heart. And so that compassion piece, our hearts and that heart energy and that compassion is so much more powerful than even our thoughts and our intellect. So I think that passion and compassion, having that in business adds a whole nother dimension and depth to empower to the business. Genuineness, that I think it goes right along with the compassion. Being who we are and being truly who we are. And just like you said, we can't judge another person's life path. We can be genuine to who we are and allow space for other people to be genuine. And there's a magic that happens when you have that. And when people feel safe, being a genuine leader makes other people feel safe to just be genuine and be authentic. And when you have that kind of safety, I call it psychological safety. When you have that kind of safety in a group, then you can innovate. Yes. Then you can make huge strides. Because when you're creating something new, when you're building a business, when you're problem solving in a business, when people feel psychologically safe, they can come up with new ideas that you would have never thought of. And when you have a group of people that are doing that, mixed with compassion and authenticity and all of those things, it does make for greater impact when it comes to business. And the performance and the sustainability of the business, when your people are thriving, when you have a, you know, you obviously you have to have a good sustainable business model to start with. But when you have the foundations laid and you add compassion and genuineness and that connection with others, it just turns up the volume on a business.
Yeah, and I think, you know, our best trained employees are our greatest resource. And if we take in, we invest in them from a humanitarian perspective, and we take an interest in them in their personal lives and what's going on with their families, what's going on with them. If we're genuinely concerned about their welfare, they're going to run through a brick wall for their supervisors to not only make sure they're meeting the organization's missions and objectives and values, but they're going to want to make their individual supervisor look really, really good because of the fact that that supervisor has taken the time to take the interest in that employee.
Absolutely. That's it. You're 100% correct. 100% correct all day long, every day. And, you know, one of the things that with, you know, we're talking about compassionate leadership and this new wave of leadership and how we're doing it, it does take some different tools that we haven't learned in the past. So as an entrepreneur growing up in the command and control top down, you know, business model, I learned command and control. And that was a strong leader, is that you put that bravado out there and you were confident and courageous and all of those things. There wasn't sustainability, there wasn't performance, and we were missing those things. So I had to go out and find what are the tools now for this new way of leadership, and how do we implement that into our businesses? And that's, you know, a lot of where the education came from in the Heart Profit model. Is there is a different framework of leadership. Yep. There's a different framework of business that we need where we can pour the compassion in and be sustainable and have performance. So I do think that there are additional tools that we need, that it's not just compassion and just showing that you care, but I do think that's a huge part of it, along with the other things that form that foundation that allows for the business to be performing. Mm-hmm. At a high level.
Absolutely. To me, command and control equals fear. And I don't know anybody who is got a modicum of self-esteem that responds to achieving organizational directives through fear or threats. And it's, what do we need to do to create a safe environment? What do we need to do to create a buy-in for them to the mission? Well, how can we make them part of the solution as opposed to just witnesses to the problem?
Amen. Amen. Yeah.
So if compassionate leadership is the way to go, why don't more executives do that? What are some of the internal or external barriers that prevent supervisors, CEOs from engaging in heart-centered, compassionate leadership?
That is a fantastic question. Thank you for asking that, because this is a huge question, and it's a real question. I want to answer this from two different vantage points. One is, there's a stigma that goes with compassion in your leadership being soft. It makes you soft. And so there's this whole stigma around compassionate heart-based leadership that it makes you soft and it's weak. That's what people think. So that's one thing, is just like people's perspective of what that is. But on the other side of that, it goes back to what I was just talking about. When I started a new business in 2020, and the business model was all about wrapping support around single moms. So I started a manufacturing plant. We were manufacturing a product. I hired single moms. We had daycare on site. We had our managers, who was me at the time, were mental health coaches. So I was going to help them out. And it gave us a dual generation approach to solving the mental health crisis, because we were working with the moms and their kids. Well, I got 6 months down the road in this business, and everybody felt loved and cared for, very loved and cared for, except me. I was in over my head, and the things that needed to get done were getting done, and it was really messy, and it wasn't working like I had envisioned that it would work. So that goes back to what I was just saying. There is a framework of business that allows for compassion and sustainability and performance. And so if you don't have those skill sets, and so when I was going through that, I was talking to other business owners and leaders that were my friends, and I was telling them about what was going on, telling them my vision and how I wanted, you know, we needed to have more compassion and work. And they were saying, we have the same problem. We want to be more compassionate. We want to help our people. We want to help take care of our people, the people that are in our care. Mm-hmm. But when we do, they take advantage of us. And they start feeling entitled. It's a real problem. So we don't know how to do that either. And so what I found was that there was a whole gaggle of leaders that wanted to be compassionate, that wanted to help the people out, but that kept running into that wall of, oh, I give over here, and then they take more than they give. And so there's not the give and take. It was more one-sided giving. And so I recognized early on that there's a real issue if you don't understand the framework that is necessary to have the trust and respect going both ways. So I think that's a piece of the problem why leaders don't embrace this as well. I think they've tried and they've probably gotten burned.
Yeah, and I've heard that in other settings before, that, you know, kindness is equated with to weakness, particularly if you're in a supervisory capacity.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think if there are boundaries that are set under the veil of compassion and boundaries that structure the employee supervisor relationship in a way that is going to encourage buy-in, and it's also going to make sure that they just know that these are the things that I expect. Here's the resources I'm going to provide to help you. And with the expectation that the employee is going to do their part. It's almost like a, you know, informed consent contract that clinical supervisors get, or that clinicians get into with their clients. Here's the resources I'm going to provide. Here's my expectations for you. Here are the consequences that you will bring upon yourself that if you don't achieve those objectives. Here are the consequences that I bring upon myself if I don't position myself as somebody who can help you meet those objectives. So maybe, you know, a little, maybe some boundaries and contracts can maybe help accentuate, you know, the value of compassion.
Yeah, absolutely. And communication, clear communication, and helping them understand the why behind. Like, you know, we have these rules and policies and procedures, but if somebody doesn't understand the why behind it, they might break the rule, not understanding the full consequence to the business as a whole. We have a tendency to be like, well, they don't need to know that. It's not really important, or, you know, it doesn't really matter. If they follow these policies, we won't have any problems. But with this new style of leadership, it is more about educating them on all of the things. So that, because when you have this two-way respect and this two-way commitment to one another, you want them to understand not that I'm going to give you consequences, but that if these things don't happen, here's the consequence to the business. And if these things happen to the business, here's the consequence to all of us.
That's right.
We're all in this together. So if we don't each do our part, then it impacts the whole. And it's more of like really laying it out and making sure that people understand the bigger picture and their role in that bigger picture.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's an important point too. It's just not only how do my actions impact me and my inability to contribute to the organizational mission, but how do my actions impact everybody else? And when you're in this together, the action of one employee can have a trickle-down effect on everybody in that organization.
Yes, and when they understand that and they truly feel a part of, that's when they will blow through walls for you and make sure that those things don't happen so that so your company can succeed, is when they fully feel a part of the team and they understand all of the repercussions.
Yeah. Heart pioneers. I saw that on your website. So what's a heart pioneer and why do you believe they're important to the success of any business or movement?
So we are a 501c3. We have board members. We have a team of volunteers and committee members that are really driving the change for the society at large in this acceleration. So the heart pioneers are those that want to be a part of making this movement happen. And we have lots of opportunity for people to get involved.
Wonderful. So these are like stakeholders to Heart Profit.
Yes. Yes.
I like it. That's the building an extension of community outside of your immediate organization. And we need community to succeed in anything, Stacy.
Yes, yes, exactly. And this is a movement that is so much bigger than any one person. And so building an army to take this business model out into the world and accelerate it is what's going to make the change. So our heart pioneers are super duper important. And it's not just the volunteers, but also the leaders that come and take the education.
Yep.
They come and take this information in and transform themselves as heart pioneers and changing the way we do business.
Well, I'll tell you, it sounds like the heart pioneers are just another very creative and very innovative and very necessary part of your movement. So, it sounds like you're doing some wonderful things with Heart Profit, and I know your organization is going to make a positive impact forward. So, I have a couple more questions for you before our time ends today. And one of my last questions is if there's one thing, one ultimate takeaway wisdom you want to leave our listeners with today, what would that be, Stacy?
I would like to say that we're going into a whole different era. Our whole humanity is shifting. It's shifting in a big way. And the profit at all costs, the command and control, the old style of leadership is becoming obsolete. And I believe the way things are shifting, they're shifting really fast right now. I believe in the next 2 to 5 years, that business model will be obsolete because people are recognizing that where they spend their money and where they spend their time is where they're putting energy into something and it's growing. And they're recognizing that the old style of doing business, the greedy, corrupt corporations working for them and buying from them is what keeps them going.
Yep.
And they're recognizing that if we don't buy from them and we don't work for them, they're not going to keep going. And so there's a huge shift happening. And I'd say within the next 2 to 5 years, we're going to be having a world full of people that are only working for and buying from companies that do good and that are heart-based, heart-led companies. So if you are a leader out there, I would say this is a great time to invest in your own leadership style in incorporating these heart-based, heart-led ways of doing business. And it really starts from within.
Yeah.
It all starts from within. So it starts from, where am I disconnected from myself? Where am I unhealed? Where do I have unhealed stuff? where am I not compassionate to myself? And finding those places and healing those places, because once you find that, it's a lot easier than to connect with other people and have that same compassion for other people.
Yeah. Makes
sense. But it's not something, it's not something you can fake.
No.
It is definitely the genuine word that you used is super important. You can't fake this. So the companies that try to fake it, people are going to see through that.
Well, if her profit can become a microcosm for what I hope to see as far as a general global transformation in this world, where our values are about inclusivity, compassion, presence, genuineness, and tolerance.
Yeah. And yes.
So hopefully her profit can be part of a greater global movement to make that happen. So
yes.
My last question for you, people want to get in touch with you, contract for your services. What's the best way for them to do that, Stacey?
Yes, heartprofit.org is our website. So that's just HEARTPROFIT.org. You can start there, and there's a lot of information there. You can reach out to us on any of the social media platforms. HeartProfit is one word. And we would love, love, love to hear from you. Any emails that get sent through, I do see them. So if you contact us through the website, or you can find me on social media and reach out to me, that's fine too. I love it. I would love to connect with anybody that's interested in becoming this type of leader.
I'll make sure all of that information gets into the episode notes when our episode goes live. Stacey, thank you so much for a wonderful conversation today. I enjoyed it immensely, and I hope we can talk again in the future sometime.
Absolutely, Dave. Thank you for a wonderful conversation and for being so thoughtful about this and for helping us get the word out there so we can change the world.
You're welcome. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.